Picks the 10-minute speaker. So tonight, Marcus picked John. John, come on up and lay down the 10-minute speak, please. Give a round of applause for John. Come on.
That's a rough tradition. Just screw me up again. I'm John, alcoholic.
Hey, John. Hey, John.
You're supposed to read the 12 traditions to give me more time. I'm kind of Mark's pitch man tonight, you know, like the old vaudeville days. I'm supposed to get you all warmed up for the main speaker. I could spend a whole 10 minutes talking about Flagstaff, but Mark can talk about that. If he can remember it, more than I can. Anyway, what it was like. Horrible. It took me a lot of years to figure out that when I had one drink, I was going to have more. And I had to have a caveat to that. If I couldn't have more, I was thinking about the next time I could have more. And that's my drinking history. I've been a periodic, I've been a daily drinker, I've been a gutter drinker, bar drinker, you name it, I've did it over about a 50-year career. Over 20 of it coming in now to AA. Hell, I was a speaker in 1981. Except I went back out in 83. I don't share a lot of my drinking things because we all know how to drink here. It's just amusement. We've all done stupid, idiotic things when we're drinking, if we remember them. See, I used to claim for years when I was going in and out AA, I wasn't a blackout drinker. Because my definition was one of these guys who started drinking and ended up in Las Vegas, didn't know how he got there. So that was how I understood blackout drinkers. And I couldn't be one of those because I could tell you that the other night I was at Shaw's and I was at the Sam Ray Inn and I was at the Landmark. The problem was I couldn't tell you what I did there. But I had a book of matches, so I knew I was there. So, and that's pretty much true when I was a bar drinker. I could tell you what bar I was at, I just don't remember what I did when I was there. You know, I was a 24-hour drinker when they sent me to Germany in 68. God, I loved it. See, that was before I became an alcoholic. I had no clue what that was. I just know they sent me to a country, the whole country drank. From 6 in the morning to whenever. And I fit right in, you know. I love them gasthouses. I love that German beer. I love that 25 cents a shot bourbon and water at happy hour. I don't know how I survived it. Looking back, I really don't. The only time I didn't drink there was when I was in the Wiesbaden Hospital for a couple of months with severe mononucleosis. Of course, that was brought on by excessive drinking, but I didn't know that. Just thought I was tired a lot. It had nothing to do with going to bed at 2, getting up at 6. You know, going to work and starting the whole routine over again at 4 the next, you know, surviving till happy hour started. And that's how the drinking went. And it cost me a couple of marriages, a couple of careers. I like to focus a little bit on the last 10 years because in 1991, I'd been in and out AA for 11, 12, 13 years, something like that, and I could get a couple years, and I just could not stay stopped, no matter my best efforts. I had that thing in the back of my head that said someday I was going to drink normally. Of course, I didn't understand then, like I do now, that my definition of normal drinking and normal drinking are worlds apart. My idea of normal drinking is to drink as much as you want, as long as you want, with no side effects. Now that's insanity by definition, but that was my idea, you know, and it never happened. But I went through a bad divorce in the early 90s. I lost a government career, kind of, and even though there was periods in there I wasn't drinking, I was totally nuts, and I didn't know it. I just, you know, I didn't have any friends. They pulled my clearance. My career was going down the drain. The marriage was gone. And I ended up for about 10 years living off the streets. Walking around this town, this area down here. Christ, I spent couple of years sleeping in the bushes with a pint of vodka in the inside jacket of a nice jacket I had with the big pocket. And I'd tell people I'm only drinking a pint a day. Well, I was drinking the pint I had in there. I didn't tell them I refilled it 2-3 times a day. You know, and the reality at that time frame was I was drinking for survival. It didn't work. I knew it didn't work, but I knew I couldn't live without it. I couldn't do what it took to survive on the streets without that buzz. And if you're new here and you're thinking you can't get there, you can if you live and keep drinking. You'll get there. And it's not a fun place to be, believe me. Especially when you're older, it's not a fun place to be. And I ended up in, skip a little part, but 2005, basically, 2004, I just got a couple years sobriety and found out about a senior living deal in Reno, Nevada, where I got sober. And I thought, well, I can go back there. This will work out. I know where the meetings are. And worked out real great till I got off the bus downtown Reno. First thing I did was go to the liquor store, get a pint and a six-pack, check in the motel, and I don't know how the guy rented me the room the next day. I really don't. That was the start of the end. That 6 months was the end of the end of the insanity. Because during that time frame, I wasn't drinking a lot. But where it took me was I was going to AA, I was leading meetings, but drinking. Not a lot, but I couldn't quit drinking. And towards the end, I was in this apartment I had, owing back rent, utilities were shut off. It was April in Reno, which is not the warmest time of year. I had no heat, and I was surviving on steel reserve and Wheaties. And I get up on this particular morning, April 27, 2005, and decided I was either going to check into that detox at the Reno VA hospital one more time, or I was going to hitchhike back to California, because I understood the streets in California. The streets in Reno are kind of mean, you know, really mean. And because I was tired of looking out the window, seeing who's ringing the doorbell. You know, you peek through the blinds, that became me. And I checked in that hospital, and something happened in the first 3 or 4 days. I can't explain it to this day. I just know somewhere in that first 3, 4, 5, 7 days, the obsession for alcohol was lifted. It hasn't come back yet, thank God. And I went from there up to a VA facility in White City, Oregon, rehab facility. And one of the first things I did up there was I went through the hoops and saw the psychiatrist. Because, I was always having this problem. Well, why do I keep drinking? And what I found out about myself was I've been dealing with depression since I was a kid. Never knew it. And it made a big difference in my life because I got out of medication that leveled out those deep mood swings. You know, so I wasn't dwelling in the past all the time or worried about what was coming down the road. It allowed me to start living in today, which I'd heard in these rooms for years, you know. So, but that's not what made me an alcoholic, by the way. What made me an alcoholic was picking up the first drink of alcohol. That's what made me an alcoholic. But these are side issues that if you're new here, you need to look into. Because they can be affecting your life in serious ways. And since that day, I haven't had a drink in almost 10 years now. And that's truly a miracle. For some in the room who knew me, like Mark back then, he realized the miracle. He remembers when I was on the streets and you know, what I looked like and how close to death I really was. Today, I'm standing in front of you. I was kidding Earl back there. I crawled off my deathbed to come down here and give this pitch. Well, that's not really that far from the truth. There is some truth to that. I'm fighting a serious form of lung cancer, and so I have to live in today. I have to. Because right now I got two different doctors reading this CAT scan telling me two different things. So, you know. Who do you believe? Are they looking at the same documents? So, you know, going through a little of this, and you just can't let that stuff get to you. You know, you just got to plug along, do the next thing in front of you to do. And even going through all this, you know, I've never thought of picking up a drink. Amazing to me. Amazing to me. Ray, my sponsor, was with me a couple of years ago when this dike, when we had when they snipped off the bit of tissue out of the lung to confirm the cancer, you know. They were grateful he went down with me that day. Just a little bit of moral support. Most of the time I go down there on my own, and it's fine. I'm used to it, you know. The only good thing about going to that VA hospital in West LA is, even with my own problems, there's a lot of people down there with a lot worse problems. Believe me. So you can get grateful in a hurry down there if you're just sitting around watching people missing limbs and all kinds of other things, you know. So you have to, in life, keep a positive attitude. And just, you don't pick up a drink. I don't care what the reason excuse is. I mean, I could give you an excuse. I like the part in the book. I'm not going to quote chapter because I'm not that type, but it's in there and it says in a century we had 1,000 reasons for drinking, and some of them made sense. You know, and that was me. I had a reason for every drink I ever took, and sometimes it even made sense. I can remember years ago thinking, God, if I had something like cancer, I'd be justified in my drinking. That's how sick we are mentally, you know. Now that I got cancer, I don't even think of drinking. So that shows you how we change if we stay sober for a period of time. And God doesn't let these things happen. They happen in His time. And I've shared this not very often, but if I'd had this cancer at 2 years sobriety, I might not be sober today. It happened at a time when I could handle it. Okay? And because the aim of the game is that if I die from the cancer, fine. I can accept that. What I don't want to do is die in the insanity of alcoholism. Because I've been there and I've been that close to death. And that's not the way to go. It's just not, you know. Am I 100% cured? No. I'll never be cured. I just look at my sponsor. Hell, he's got a lot of years. He ain't close to being cured. He's even... He's still married to the same woman. That's nuts. You know. At least I had two wives. You know. So you know, these are my examples. You know, I love to be around old timers. Find out I've still got a long way to go. We're not perfect. All I do is strive a little bit each day to try to be better. Some days I can move forward and some days I go backwards. I just don't drink in between. You know, and I hang out with sober people. I don't hang out in the bars pretending to play pool and enjoy it. You know, and I do go in liquor stores to buy cigarettes, and that's fine. You know, it's like the book says, if our intentions are in the right place, alcohol is really kind of a non factor in my life. Unless I allow it to be. And I choose not to do that today. And, I think with that, I want to wrap this up and preserve time because I've known Mark for a long time. And God, he'd just tell you about Flagstaff, which is a story in itself, let alone all the other stuff he's done. No, I don't want to steal his thunder. See, that's why I didn't wear a sports coat, because I didn't want to outdo the main speaker. Thank you, folks.
All right, moving right along, we're going to have the 12 traditions read, and we're going to have Mark come on up and read the 12 traditions. And while Mark is coming up, just want to say, if you've parked your car over and you're planning on going over to